You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 223 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Sensational Wonder Woman number 2, Future State Dark Detective number 1, Future State Green Lantern number 1, Future State Justice League number 1, Future State Kara Zor-El Superwoman number 1, Future State Robin Eternal number 1, Future State Superman Wonder Woman number 1, and Future State Teen Titans number 1. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC News. Robin gets his own ongoing series. The new series by writer Joshua Williamson and artist Gleb Melnikoff releases Tuesday, April 27th. It will star Batman's son, Damian Wayne, in his brand new darker outfit. And nope, this is not a Tim Drake series.
I mean, we kind of assumed that Damian wouldn't be done. He just, like I've mentioned a number of times, Damian just is, in my opinion, the one that makes the most sense is Robin. So,
yeah,
not really that surprised by this.
No, not that surprising. But I'm excited about a Robin series, but then I'm disappointed by a Robin series because it's written by Williamson.
Yeah, that's, I do, I wonder though, Drew, but by the fact that it's a Robin series, I wonder if it might have a chance to be better because it's going to resist some of the dumber things that Williamson tends to do. You know, I think he gets a little out of control when he starts to try and introduce different superpower stuff. That was what, in my opinion, was the dumbest things about his Flash run, were a lot of his attempts at sci-fi and doing superpower stuff. And I wonder if maybe he could write a grounded series better.
Let's hope so.
It's rare for me, I know, but I'm trying to be optimistic about it. I don't even know if necessarily optimistic, but more curious. I'm curious if in theory at least, a different style story maybe brings out something different in his writing.
Well, it's a Robin series, so we're gonna be reviewing it, I can tell you that.
I think, and that's the other reason I'm hoping it's good, because we're reading it.
Yeah, we'll be reading it, so. All right, up next for DC News, a new Green Lantern series will be released April 6th by writer Joffrey Thorne and artist Dexter Soy. The title will star Jon Stewart, but will also feature some new additions to the core Lantern mythology, including Joe Mullen and Teen Lantern. Now, the newly formed United Planets and the Guardians of the Universe hold an intergalactic summit to decide who can best serve and protect the cosmos from danger. With the majority of the Green Lanterns called back to Oa, Jon Stewart arrives alongside Teen Lantern Kelly Quintella, whose powerful gauntlet could be one of the most powerful and unstable weapons in the universe. With the entire landscape of the universe in flux, is this the end of the Green Lantern Corps or a new beginning?
I'm excited that both of the new versions of Green Lantern are being incorporated into the fold. That is very exciting. I know one thing I do worry, though, and you could have said this a while ago, even back with like Baz and Jessica, is that at what point do you hit too many human lanterns?
I know exactly what you mean, because I've thought of that about that before too. We have a lot of human lanterns.
It's a lot. I mean, I thought it was already a pretty solid number. It was at six, and now it's up to eight. Now, granted, they seem to have just completely phased Baz out recently. So that's one way to fix the problem. I'm just kind of curious. It's one of those things that the more of those lanterns you have, the harder it is to do justice to them because you can really only focus on a couple at a time with a series. You know what I mean? Like, it's
Yeah.
either going to be a Hal-led series. Like, the two most logical leads are Hal or John. And in this case, we're getting John. And that's great. Like, those, I think, are the two best choices to lead a book. But then everybody else is going to kind of be reliant on kind of guest starring, or maybe they do two Lantern titles at once, but you're never going to be able to do all eight. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know
So
what you mean.
it's tough because you know there's fans of all eight of them,
Oh,
and you
yeah.
know some it's each one is somebody's favorite. So I do think that's an interesting problem that DC's going to have. That I don't have a problem with any of the Lanterns that they've I like all of them as characters, and the two recent additions,
Joe.
especially Far Sector, yeah, Joe is really good.
Yeah.
The Teen Lantern didn't really do anything in the Young Justice series, but that's also just the book in general. So,
Yeah.
but it's still an interesting. It's cool having a younger Lantern. That's not something we've really seen before. And then the fact that it's not really a Green Lantern exactly either is also interesting. So they're doing something unique with both of those characters. But then I do worry because it's so easy to just stick a new person in a Green Lantern ring. Like, that's the best way to just mix it up because of the nature of the Green Lantern Corps. But that's a pro like if you keep doing that at a certain point, we could easily hit double digits.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. At some point, they're going to have to get rid of some of the older lanterns, I think.
Which is a shame because, like you said, you know each one of the eight that exist right now is somebody's favorite. So
Yep.
that's a tough situation to do.
It is. All right, well, let's move on to our next bit of DC news. Batman goes to Europe in a new miniseries titled Batman: The Dark Knight. The six-issue series from writer Tom Taylor and artist Andy Kubert will center on a new villain named Equilibrium and will introduce new members of Batman's supporting cast.
I'm going to be pretty curious to check this out. The premise is whatever. I don't really have that strong of an opinion on it, but I'm curious to see Tom Taylor get a bigger book, in my opinion. He's for people who maybe aren't as familiar with him, I would say his biggest success with DC would be the Injustice tie-in comic. He's done the vast majority of those. He also was the creator behind the deceased, the zombie DC thing.
Oh, okay.
So he's done some relatively big stuff, but they've always been kind of like side projects. Like he's not done a ton of in continuity or major, or I would say more major spotlight books for DC. And while this is still also a side story, I'm curious. It's a Batman book, so it's going to probably sell well. So I'm kind of curious to see what he does with more main. I mean, I don't want to say that, not that his other books weren't mainstream, but you know what I mean? More closer to the spotlight book.
Right, and with it being a miniseries, that doesn't necessarily tie into what's going in the main titles too, so he might have a
Right.
little more freedom with his story.
And that's probably a good thing too. So
Yeah.
be curious. I'm like I said. The premise I don't dislike. I don't really have anything that I'm looking forward to premise wise. I'm just kind of curious to see what Tom Taylor does.
And you know we'll be reviewing it, so. All right, up next for DC News, Batwoman and Superman and Lois Arrowverse crossover has been officially canceled. Thanks, COVID.
I don't think that this is necessarily the worst thing for the shows, though, to be honest with you. Because I think both could use the time to focus on developing their own series. Well, Superman and Lois is going to be in its first season. Effectively, Batwoman's sort of in a first season. It's not really, but I mean,
Yeah,
it's
because.
completely starting over.
Yeah, pretty much. So.
So I don't know. I mean, not, I obviously would have been very curious to check it out. Not going to pretend otherwise, but it may not be the worst thing for the shows either.
Yeah, and maybe they can do it next year. So
And you know they will. It's not like we'll never see those characters interact, so
that is true.
I'm not too worried about it.
I'm not either. But COVID's the main reason why they're not doing it, so.
Right.
All right, up next for DC News, Netflix's The Sandman series cast Gwendolyn Christie, Captain Phasma from Star Wars, and Brienne of Tarth from Game of Thrones. So I'm excited to see her in this series.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong on this, Drew. We've got quite the cast already for this, right?
Yeah, and I haven't seen much details about the series at all, so it'll be nice going into it not knowing anything about it. Really.
Honestly, for me too, I've not read a ton of Sandman. I don't know that I've read almost any of the original series. I've read some of the later. I don't know if they were side stories or, bonus stories or whatever. I've read some of those and they were quite good. So I don't really know a whole lot about the main book itself. So the series is going to be relatively new to me anyway.
Yeah, I haven't seen a release date on it yet, so I don't know when it's coming, but I'm sure it won't be until next year or the year after. All right, and for a last bit of DC news, Zack Snyder's Justice League is no longer a four-part release. And to be honest with you, Cletus, I don't really care. I don't care anymore. When it releases, I'll watch it. If it's not four parts, I ain't gonna sit there for 4 hours and watch the whole thing. That's too long for me, dude. I'll watch it, I'll stop it, I'll come back and watch more of it if it's not a four-parter.
I also am not entirely convinced that that's true. I mean, that entire report is based on a single reply to a tweet. So, I mean, it certainly is possible that they are just going to straight up release it as a 4-hour thing and that's it. But I don't know. I don't. I'm not entirely convinced that they're not still doing it in four parts. Just because that's. I mean, it's just like when that one Netflix movie came out last year. Oh, I can't think of what it was with De Niro and Pacino, all those, and it was like a 4 or 5 hour movie, and almost nobody, nothing, I shouldn't say almost nobody, but many people, at least that I talked to, did not watch that straight through.
I haven't even watched it, so so I don't even remember it being a thing.
It got nominated for. I'm totally blanking on the name of the movie now, but which I'm gonna feel stupid later when I remember. But The Irishman, The Irishman. I mean, it was a super long movie, and I mean it was relatively popular. And I'm not saying that people didn't watch it straight through, but a lot of people that I talked to chunked the movie up into a couple parts. And like you said, Justice League's that's a lot. That's a lot to ask somebody to sit through. Especially if it's like, especially if it's a Zack Snyder thing. I mean, it's gonna be pretty dense. So I don't.
Well, we'll keep our opinions on that until we actually watch it, huh?
Yeah.
All right, well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
The kid and I have flown from one side of the galaxy to the other. We've been listening to a lot of strange podcasts, but the Monster Sci-Fi Show stands above the rest. Isn't that right, Grogu? I still hate that name.
The Monster Sci-Fi Show is part of the ESO Network. It's sci-fi from a certain point of view.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. For you.
All All right, let's talk Sensational Wonder Woman number 2. So the issue opens up with Dr. Psycho running down a hallway looking for Wonder Woman and Hawkgirl. When Dr. Psycho finds them, Hawkgirl holds him off while Wonder Woman tries to finally escape being trapped in her own mind. And when it seems like Hawkgirl is about to succumb to Dr. Psycho's powers, Wonder Woman wakes up and captures Dr. Psycho in her magic lasso. Even before
this
you
say good, I was a little bummed that it was already over, though.
I knew you were going to say that. That's exactly what I was expecting. That it went too quick.
Not even. I mean, yes. I'm not going to get into the length of these issues again, but just like this story as a whole, I was a little bummed that it had already ended. But still, I mean, if that's what the rest of this series is going to be like, I'm excited to the quality of story wise because it was enjoyable.
Yeah.
That's why I wanted more, because I was liking it so much.
But it could have opened it up to the possibility of stringing it out too long, too.
I would be more inclined to agree with that, Drew, if these issues weren't so short.
Okay.
I think you could at minimum have done 3, and it still would have felt like one issue.
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you mean. But yeah, I enjoyed it, too. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Future State Dark Detective number 1. At the beginning of this issue, Bruce Wayne is broken. To the public, Bruce Wayne is dead, and Batman is also dead to the public. And it takes an alleyway mugging to get Bruce's head back on straight and decide that he needs to take down the magistrate. Also in this issue, we see a backup story about the Grifter. He gets captured by peacekeepers and ends up teaming up with Luke Fox, who is also captured by the peacekeepers. And Luke pays the Grifter to get him out of Gotham. And the issue ends with the Grifter taking Luke to see Huntress. Now, I gotta tell you, Cletus, in the Bruce Wayne part of the story, not much happened. Honestly, I didn't think.
No, and I wasn't really a fan of that. It felt like, again, one thing I've liked for the most part about all of these Future State comics is the way that we just kind of jump into the action, that it's not heavy on setup. And yet this somehow did both. It both jumped into the middle of the action and then was entirely a setup issue. You know what I mean? It was incredible because it really did almost nothing besides set the table. But then also clearly so much had happened that was leaving out of the story. And it was like, well, if you're not going to do one, you can't, like, you got to do the other. Come on.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed because we didn't get much backstory on what had happened with Bruce that much. I mean, a little bit. I don't know. It was trying to do too much, I think. And it didn't tell anything. I don't know if I'm explaining it good or not.
Yeah, I mean, it like you said, there's not really a whole lot to the story. And it's unclear, like, when he just suddenly is in his Batman uniform, that implies that he's been working underground for a little bit, right? But then the beginning of the story suggests that he hasn't been. And so that was a little confusing to me, too, because you don't just randomly have a bat suit on you.
Yeah.
And I know it's Batman. I know he's always prepared. But, like, you don't have that outfit snap ready to go unless you've already been doing it. And yet, like you said in your summary, it suggested that he hasn't been for at least a little bit. So it's odd.
Yeah. My feeling is the next issue is going to be when the real story starts. That's what it felt like to me.
But in a miniseries, that's ridiculous. I agree with you, Drew. That's what it seems like. But that's absurd. You've only got, what, 3 issues, I think?
Yeah, something like that.
Come on.
Not that many. Now, the second story about the Grifter, I don't really care about the Grifter that much. But
care for this story.
I was surprised Luke Fox was in it. And I have a feeling that this is Luke Fox's story before he becomes Batman, the next Batman.
That was really unclear to me, right? Because I had a hard time buying that he would have just simply been caught unless it was intentional, but it didn't seem intentional.
No, it didn't. And it felt like it was before he became Batman because it kept talking about him being Batwing, which she hasn't really been for a while.
Well,
so.
But I think, see, that's the other. It's unclear to me, Drew, because I don't know. He might have been only mentioning Batwing because he doesn't want people to know that he's taken up the real job.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. It was unclear to me as well whether this was supposed to be in the midst of him being Batman, if it's before him being Batman, if you know what I mean. Like, I just not clear, not super clear.
Yeah.
And I really just, I'm sure this story was pretty good for people who are big fans of Grifter, but I don't know enough about the character to care, and this story didn't change that opinion.
Nor mine. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week, Future State Green Lantern number 1. The issue opens up with John Stewart, Salak, Gnort, helping a planet that is being invaded, and for some reason the lantern rings are not working. But they don't tell us why. The lanterns spend the whole issue fighting. And I gotta tell you, Cletus, I was not that interested in this story.
I was very frustrated, Drew. Very frustrated with this story. Because Green Lantern's been kind of off the table for a while. I know Grant's been doing his book, and you and I have enjoyed it for the most part, but it's really doing its own thing.
Yeah.
Off in its own world. Green Lantern's not really been relevant for a little while. And so then their big opportunity with the Future State thing is to just have them not be Green Lanterns. Ugh! I just... Drew, the biggest Green Lantern story, I think, ever, or arguably, and certainly in my lifetime, was Johns's run. And you
yes.
know what made that run great? Was he was a Green Lantern the whole time. Like, he was using his ring. It wasn't about, oh, but what if you took his ring away? Or, oh, what if you made the ring have a limitation like Venditti did at the beginning of his run? Or what if you did, like, what if he kills the entire Green Lantern Corps? It was just him being a Green Lantern and being, like, how awesome can he be as a Green Lantern? It's not a coincidence to me that that's the most successful story, because it just leaned into, hey, the idea of a Green Lantern's really cool, let's do that, instead of, hey, the idea of a Green Lantern's really cool, let's make them not be that.
I told you, you weren't gonna like the story.
It also just wasn't good, to be honest with
yeah.
you. Like, beyond my, I wouldn't have liked this anyway, just because it's baffling to me that DC keeps coming back to this. The best story we can tell for Green Lantern makes them not Green Lanterns. This is repeatedly in the last decade that this is the decision they've come to, which is just mind-boggling. But this story itself, the art was not good, in my opinion, and the story was just dumb. I just didn't care.
I didn't care either. They didn't do anything to make me care. But I gotta tell you, Cletus, the second story, I love the Jessica Crew story.
I agree.
We find out Jessica has been living in a sector house for the past year, and her power ring isn't working either, so of course it's tied to the other story. We see three yellow lanterns show up at the sector house because Sinestro wants them to use the Green Lantern's resources. We see Lisa Drac, Ugg One, and Lo. All characters we've seen before, or at least I remember from John's run. Now, Jessica stays hidden and takes out the lanterns one by one. First, she takes out Lo, and then she takes out UGG-1, and then finally, Jessica fights Lisa Drac. And we see that Lisa gets the upper hand, but Jessica uses the yellow battery to whack her right in the face. Love that scene. And then at the end of the issue, we have one of the yellow rings that Jessica captured saying, Jessica Cruz of Earth, you possess the ability to instill great fear. Welcome to the Sinestro Corp. And then it just ends. And we don't know. I like how it ended, because we don't know if Jessica didn't choose the ring or did choose the ring. They left it wide open. I was like, that's cool. I don't want to see Jessica as a Yellow Lantern per se, but I liked how they ended that story.
I really liked her story, and frankly should have been the lead story, because it's by far the most interesting. It also involves a Green Lantern ring. So.
Yes, even though she's not using it.
Well, but also, but even if she's not a Green Lantern, it's implied that she's going to be a Lantern. So again, it is using the main premise of the hero. I'm okay if it's a different color. It's still, again, it's the basic premise of why I'm interested in reading your book in the first place. So I thought this was a cool story, much more focused than the John Stewart story. Just all around better.
Yeah. And then we got a third story in this, and it was a Guy Gardner story. We see that Guy Gardner is on a mission to Sector 0345, the planet Rurlin. It's not his sector, and he lets Lantern BDG know he's not happy about it, the Squirrel Lantern. And Guy gets there, finds two people fighting over a piece of space debris because they think it's a religious relic. And both people think that he's a prophet that was sent to them. Guy tells them that he was sent by their god to be keeper of the relic, and suddenly his power ring loses power, and he just falls from the sky. And we see the rest of the story. Guy takes the role of a prophet and leads the people for the next 25 years trying to bring these people to a peace until Lobo shows up stating, "Hey, you opened a new Warriors, and you didn't tell me?"
This one was pretty good, and again, I thought it did a better job with the premise of not having a ring. I still don't like that, but of anybody to do that premise with, I do think, again, Guy is a better choice because we've seen him without a ring more often than the other Lanterns.
Right.
And it was also just a good – I liked the premise of the story, which is like if you just dropped Guy Gardner onto a planet, what would happen? That's a pretty good – that's an interesting story to do with that premise. Instead of just a generic, we're on a battlefield and we're going to fight real hard and like whatever. How many times have we read a story? It's basically just a war comic was the first one. Like I don't care. I just don't care. These other two at least did so. They use the same premise, but they're interesting. What if Jessica Cruz was on a space station by herself and had to defend it against Yellow Lanterns? That's much more interesting. What if you just dropped Guy Gardner onto a planet and he became a religious prophet? Well, that's pretty freaking interesting. It's just clearly these two did a much better job with the premise of trying to figure out an interesting story to tell.
Yep. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Future State Justice League number 1. The issue opens up introducing us to the Future Justice League, who have come together to face crisis after crisis. This Justice League are loved and idolized all over the world. And this team consists of Superman, John Kent, Wonder Woman, Yara Fleur, Batman, Luke Fox, Green Lantern, Joe Mullen, Aquawoman, Andy Curry, The Flash, which I'm not sure what The Flash's name was, but it was Jess from a different dimension. That's all I got out of that. Now, we learned that the old Justice League got too big, too many members, and one of the members uncovered all the Justice League secrets and used them to hurt the team and betrayed them. After that, a new Justice League charter was formed with new rules. Mandatory secret identities, no fraternization between the members, and no sharing of their true lives. Now, we also got to meet the future Legion of Doom. T.O. Morrow, Despera, Amaze X, Cobalt Blue, the Screech Owl, the Flood, and Ultraviolet Lantern. The Legion of Doom states that the Justice League will die tomorrow, and when we get to tomorrow, it's the Legion of Doom who are dead, and the Justice League shows up investigating to find out who could be powerful enough to kill the whole Legion of Doom. Now, Green Lantern takes the lead on the investigation, and we see that some of the other Justice Leaguers are breaking the fraternization rule. We see Superman and Wonder Woman share a hot dog together, and then later on we see Aquawoman and the Flash hang out at Andy's lighthouse, and they seem to hint at something romantic going on between them. Now, when Green Lantern figures out who killed the Legion of Doom, it's already too late. The Justice League is trapped in the place the Legion of Doom had freed them from, and we find out white Martians who want to take over the world are disguised as the Justice League. question for you, Cletus, before we start talking about anything, because this issue wanted to show how loved and idolized this Justice League is. But if you go back to the individual stories, you've got Metropolis that's in dire straits, and that crazy story with John and him bottling up Metropolis. And then you've got the Magistrate in Gotham and how crazy Gotham is right now. But this Justice League issue is saying that all these heroes are loved and idolized. I just couldn't buy that.
I don't think that this story is necessarily happening in the same timeline. Remember, in theory, part of the thing with this is that we're getting glimpses into potential futures, not necessarily one future.
Okay, that's true. That is true.
So it's either, I don't know. So I think it's either after all of these other stories get resolved and it's past that, or I think more likely this is just a different future where you have all of these same future versions of these characters, but they succeed essentially and form the Justice League.
Okay.
I could be wrong. That was just how I interpreted it, because within the summary that they've put at the beginning of all of these, they've used the term futures plural, which is how I would have done that. If I was them, that's how I would have done this event too. I wouldn't have tried to do one big net. I would have tried to do multiple different things.
Okay, and true, that's what they're doing, so. All right. What did you think of this issue?
It didn't really do it for me, because we never really got to see the Justice League do anything. So, I got what they were setting up, and then they say, well, you know, this one succeeds in part, or at least they believe succeeds in part, because they never fraternize, and then we see in this, they're all fraternizing. They're just not all together.
Right.
There's like little cliques within the Justice League. And so, I don't know. It was, they're setting up the villains tarnishing their legacy and reputations, or getting ready to do that. But we haven't actually seen them in action, so we wouldn't know the difference as the audience.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Also in this issue, we had a Justice League Dark story. And when this story opens up, we find out that Merlin has returned and veiled the world in a glamour spell. We see the Justice League Dark is falling apart. Merlin has taken all of magic as his own. The Tower of Fate has fallen, and Khalid is missing. Merlin's hunters are rounding up magic folk and burning them at the stake one by one, trying to interrogate them. We find out that Bobo is currently the host of Etrigan, who refuses to fight against Merlin. And while investigating, Xantana comes upon Rory Regan, who ends up donning his Ragman uniform to fight off Merlin's hunters. Next, they come across John Constantine and Madame Xanadu. Etrigan must meet an old man who can tell the future from his coffee can. And we see that Etrigan hits the old man with Hellfire, and he's transformed into Khalid, Dr. Fate. The issue ends with Dr. Fate telling us we need to listen to a story before the Justice League Dark can make their final stand.
I like this way better than the main Justice League story. This was very, very interesting.
It was interesting, wasn't it?
It was one of those ones where this was one of the ones I was most bummed to have not seen the story that led up to it. But also, like, I'm kind of okay with it because it sets up such an interesting status quo in and of itself that I'm curious to see that part of the story explored.
Yeah, I was very surprised when Bobo was the host of Etrigan. That I was not expecting, for sure. I also wasn't expecting that old man with the coffee can to be Dr. Fate either. A lot of interesting twists just in this little bit of story we got. So I'm curious to see how it's going to end. Like you said earlier, we're probably only going to get three issues, and we're probably going to see the next issue is going to be the story that Dr. Fate wants to tell, and then we'll probably get the wrap-up to it in the issue after that. So, curious to see what that looks like.
I am, and I also am curious if some of this, we know some of this stuff's going to get pulled over afterwards, and I'm curious to see if they do, not this specific story, if we see something like this
continue on, hopefully, with a future Justice League Dark story.
Yeah. I mean, they've done great with Justice League Dark so far, so I'm sure we won't be disappointed.
Look, we gotta talk.
Yeah, Thunder Talk.
We're going all kinds of sideways with that sweet nerd junk.
Woke nerd junk.
It's topical.
Political.
Dare I say radical.
We've got all your latest news and reviews.
Hot music.
And a whole lot of comedy.
But it ain't for kids.
Definitely mature content.
So let's talk.
Let's talk Thunder Talk.
Thunder Talk is a proud member of the ESO Network.
All right, let's move on to our next title for this week. Future State Kara Zor-El Superwoman Number 1. The issue opens up years from now, and Kara is living on the moon colony. She's visiting Krypto's gravestone when a spaceship crash lands, and a strange visitor from another planet emerges and steals Kara's powers. Now, Kara finds out that the shape-shifting, power-stealing teenage girl has run away from home and is seeking refuge on the moon. Kara and Lenara do a whole lot of talking to each other about their personal problems and become friends. And when Lenara helps Kara with an irrigation system, Lenara gets angry when she's not thanked by the people of the moon colony. And she gets mad at Kara for not making the people thank her and gives her a super smack. And then Lenara apologizes and then leaves. At the end of the issue, Kara apologizes to Krypto, and her peace turns to rage. All right, Cletus. I gotta confess that I did not really connect to this story. And while I don't think it's a bad story, it's not for me. Because it felt like I was reading a therapy session. And the other problem I had with the issue was it was very feminine. Even the artwork felt really feminine, which makes sense because it was written and drawn by women. So it just wasn't a story for me.
I agree with most of that. I mean, I certainly don't have a problem with the story being feminine because, I mean, it's
it's Superwoman, yeah.
And the women being the target audience for the book is ideal, I would say. So that's fine with me. I feel conflicted about the artwork because I like DC having different styles and not just having one kind of, you know, house style for their books. So I like the idea of an art style like that. However, I thought it didn't do its job fully in telling the story. I felt like there was too many times where the artwork jumped in ways that it was hard to follow the action. At least for me. Like, sometimes it made sense, and the other times it felt like from one panel to the next, there was too big of a gap, and it was hard to kind of piece together what was supposed to have happened in between. And then the story, the thing that got me, that took me out with the story by far the most, like, I thought the story was at best okay. But the thing that really took me out was that the whole thing is being told to Krypto, as if that was her mentor and guide in life. Krypto the super dog, Drew, is who she is talking to and apologizing. Like, I'm sorry, I can't live up to your example. Krypto the super dog? I mean, that's got to be a joke, right? Like, that was, like, that's such an absurd thing to be, and yet it wasn't played for, like, that's something you do in like a satire or a joke, right? A comedic book.
Right.
But that was legit. That was played seriously. That was a straight-faced, I'm sorry, I can't live up to your legacy, Krypto the Superdog. What?
All right, let's move on to our next title. Future State, Robin Eternal Number 1. The issue opens up with the magistrate after Robin, Tim Drake. Robin is ordered to stop all movement by the order of the magistrate. Robin tries to use an MVP on the cyber, but it doesn't work, and Robin gets captured in its grip. When it looks like it's the end for Robin, Spoiler shows up and blows its head off. And Tim is very surprised to see Stephanie, who hung up her cape when Batman was killed. And when Tim asks Stephanie to help him stop a convoy of supplies coming to the magistrate, she tells him, sorry, I'm not interested in watching people die, and then she takes off. Robin goes to see a second woman named Darcy, who was part of the We Are Robin storyline that I never heard about before. So I did a quick Google search to find out it was some new 52 miniseries that I'm going to be checking out soon. But Darcy and Tim learn that the magistrate are using the Lazarus resin to make their cybers immortal. We see that Spoiler changed her mind and shows up as Tim and Darcy are about to go on their mission. And with introductions made, the Peacekeepers show up. Battle against them until a cyber shows up. And Tim battles the cyber, and the Lazarus resin gets all over him.
I know it's Tim Drake, but I gotta say, Drew, this is not for me. This didn't do it for me.
I was just happy to have a Tim Drake story. Me, I like the issue, even though the story wasn't. I don't think the story was that great, but I love seeing Tim. I love the interaction with Stephanie, and I don't even know who this Darcy person is. But she seemed to be an interesting character, too. So I guess I was just happy to get a Tim Drake story because I haven't had one for a long time. And it got me interested enough to check out that miniseries from the New 52, who knows if it's going to be good or not. But I don't know. Was that a story you had read during the New 52? Was that
No, I know of it, but I never did end up reading it. So I don't really know a whole lot about it other than it was supposed to be like almost like this youth movement sort of thing where it wasn't just one Robin. It was all of these kids kind of stepping up. That's my very limited knowledge of it.
All right. Well, I'm going to check it out at some point. All right. Well, let's move on to Future State Superman Wonder Woman number one. The issue opens up with John Kent waking up in the morning, having a cup of Joe, using his heat vision to write Good Morning Metropolis in the sky, and noticing he's on the planet Tatooine because there's two suns. In Sao Paulo, Brazil, Wonder Woman Yara Flor saves a helicopter from crashing, and inside is Counselor Senor Sosa. Wonder Woman warns him that he better come up with the money that he should be using to fix the infrastructure soon. And I had to laugh at the panel where the councilman and the pilot are writing, I will not embezzle money from the people of the city. And the pilot's writing, I will not try to shoot Wonder Woman. Found that freaking hilarious. Next, we see Wonder Woman visit the god of the sun and of the moon, who apparently run a farm outside of Sao Paulo. And it was a solar flare from the sun god that had caused that helicopter to crash. While having a drink with the gods of the sun and the moon, Wonder Woman noticed Solaris, the tyrant sun and enemy of Superman John Kent. As the suns battle in the sky, both Superman and Wonder Woman take care of problems on Earth related to the suns. And then they have a talk. Yara tells John that he's not looking well, and John explains that Solaris's red sunlight is playing havoc on his Kryptonian cells, and he's being depowered and overpowered all at once. Now, Superman decides to go deal with Solaris directly. He asks Solaris if it is wise to take on both Superman and the Sun God at the same time, and John makes a deal with Solaris to have a contest for the test of strength. The next morning, we see that John has breakfast with Yara in a diner, and she's not happy that John has asked her once again to join the Justice League because of its politics. Now, after breakfast, we see that John takes to the sky to write his good morning message over Metropolis, and his power fails, and we see him fall back to Earth. They bring in a lot of the mythology we've seen in the few stories we've seen with her so far. I like how they incorporated that here with the sun and the moon gods. But this was a weird story.
I kind of liked it. I liked it because it's setting up more, I think, of what to expect in the long run with this Wonder Woman character.
And I really like it, Drew. Like, not necessarily this story, but like, I really like what they're setting up and what it looks like we're going to get from this new Wonder Woman. I mean, I'm so, like you said, this focus on South American mythology and the heavy interaction between her and the gods. And we saw in her own book, she was interacting with Greek gods too. Fascinating. It's like, I'm so excited. I'm just really excited about the future of these books with her in them. That's just so cool. I thought this book did a really interesting job of showing, like, giving us in, like, obviously we saw John as Superman in his own book, but this was, I thought, a good way of giving us a snapshot of his normal day and, like, how he goes about being Superman. And it's very, like, mathematical and very deliberate. I think more so than usually what we see with his dad.
Right.
And then, like you said, we get a glimpse of just Wonder Woman doing her thing in a relatively normal day for her. And then, like, obviously we get the two worlds colliding with you know, his villain interacting with her god. And it, I mean, I'm not going to say it's the best story, but I'm interested. And I'm mostly just interested, again, in the snapshot of both of those characters and building the world around Yara is just really exciting. I'm just so excited for the future of that character.
I am too. I love the comedy that's tied in with her stories. So, both of them. So, yeah, I'm really interested in this character. And I'm not sure what I think of John as Superman yet. I'm not that thrilled with his regular story. And in this one, he's okay. But I think I need to see more of his character before I come to a decision of if I actually like him or not.
I felt like this book was the best look we've gotten of him as Superman, just being Superman, to me at least.
Yeah. I did.
We got the one in his own book felt like a very, like, intentionally felt like an out of character moment for him. It felt like that wasn't what he normally did. I don't know. And then you and I are both on the same page where we didn't totally care for it.
Yeah. Now, I did like his good morning message in the sky. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yes, I liked that too. And I liked how that kind of, we got that payoff at the end of the issue where we see his interactions with the two sons and all of that is somehow overloaded or messed up his body.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week. Future State, Teen Titans number 1. The issue opens up on Titans Island, New York, New York. Titans Tower is destroyed. Oh, and so is much of New York in the background. Amico is here to visit Wally West's grave, and Dick Grayson is searching through the rubble and finds his old Red X mask. And then we get a flashback to where someone gave him his old Red X mask for his birthday. Further exploration through the rubble, Nightwing finds an H-dial. Back at the Titan safe house, which is located under Queens, we find out that Cybeast, a combination of cyborg and beast, is passed out. Starfire and some other Titans are trying to wake him up. We get another flashback scene of Cyborg and Beast Boy training some new recruits. Now, Nightwing is trying to get the Teen Titans to spring into action. Why? We are not told. But Starfire makes it clear that Nightwing is no longer the leader of the Titans. We see Raven is leading a team that is fighting a Hydra. And then she loses her connection. And she's talking to someone who's in a prison cell that seems to be training her. We find out that Cybeast is finally awake and he has found the Spear of Destiny. And they want to use it to destroy the Beast or four riders that seem to be destroying everything. Now, Shazam's team is in Detroit on the front lines trying to fight these monster riders, whatever. And we see that Dick Grayson goes to that prison cell and frees whoever's in there, gives him his old Red X suit because apparently they've worn it before, and then he puts on Deathstroke's masks, which I thought was really weird. I don't know. What was your take on this issue, Cletus?
I mean, I didn't really care for it. It was just wasn't enough. To me, there wasn't enough information about what happened.
I think if next issue is pretty good, I think it will retroactively make this issue better because we'll have a better understanding of what happened.
Yeah, I agree with you because it was hard to follow. We didn't know what had happened. Why is New York destroyed? And what's going on? It sounds like there's some sort of apocalyptic thing going on, but they didn't really explain it. We just like many of these other issues, we were just kind of thrown into it, and there just wasn't enough for us to figure out what was going on.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Like, I like being thrown into the middle of the action with these stories, but like you said, not all of them have done a good job of giving us something to grasp onto in the moment. Like, I'm okay if you throw us in the middle as long as there's a clear story to hit the ground running. Like, for example, Harley Quinn, I thought, did a good job where we don't know, and with all of the Batman books, we don't know necessarily exactly what happened to lead up to the Magistrate. But Harley Quinn, for example, we hit the ground running. She's basically Hannibal Lecter giving the police advice, right?
Makes sense.
Wonder Woman, we don't know what led her to become Wonder Woman, but we hit the ground running with her going to Hades. It tells you have something to grasp onto immediately where, yes, there's a part of the story that you don't know, but there's a clear present story to follow. And then this issue, we know something happened, but the problem is that most of the issue is sort of about the fallout of that something, but we don't know what that was. So we're seeing all these characters deal with the consequences of something that we don't know about. And so it would be like jumping into, issue 16 of a normal run where you'd be like, what? That's what this felt like. It didn't feel like an issue one. It felt like, issue 16 of a run where you've missed the first 15 issues.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that analogy, because that's definitely what it felt like. All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have a shout-out, Cletus?
So I was thrilled to get the Sinestro Corps back, because I feel like it's been a while since we've seen them. And Lysa Drak, like you said, first appears in John's run. But what it made me think of more, she's a much bigger player in the Sinestro series that followed the end of John's run, and that was by Cullen Bunn. If the Sinestro Corps specifically is something you're interested in, it's a pretty good run. The focus is pretty heavily on Sinestro, and then his daughter also is, I would say, the next biggest character in the run. Pretty interesting book. I mean, I'm not going to put it on the same level as the John's run by any means, but it's pretty cool.
All right, and for my shout-out, I'm going to shout-out about WandaVision. Because I ended up checking it out this weekend, and I thought it was pretty awesome. I was kind of wondering what you thought about it, because I knew you were really excited about it.
I liked it. I liked it a lot. I know my complaint, not with the show, but with the marketing, is I think it's two things. I think, A, they know that the show started slow, and they want to make sure people know that more is coming. And that's why we're getting these glimpses into further episodes, I think further into the season than we normally see with previews. But then also the nature of the show, because each episode is progressing in the era of TV, it's very obvious when you're looking, you can tell immediately you're looking at a clip that's got to be several episodes away, because visually it's completely different. You know what I mean? Like something like The Mandalorian, for example, can get away with showing a clip from later in the season because it's all Star Wars action. You know what I mean? It doesn't really look visually that different. This show is wildly different episode to episode. And so if you're putting out these trailers or commercials, like I saw a lot of commercials this weekend as I was watching football, all of these clips are clearly from different episodes. And it's not that they're giving anything away necessarily, but you can still see visually where the show is going that you might not be able to as clearly tell with a normal show.
I got to tell you, Cletus, I love seeing the older style shows when I was watching these because, I used to see them in reruns when I was a kid. So it was just funny. And some of the stuff they did, it was just funny. And I was laughing like crazy. So, and I don't know if with you being younger than I am and not, probably not seeing a lot of these older show reruns or whatever, if you get a lot of the jokes I was getting from it. So that's why I was curious to see what your take was on it.
I mean, I liked it a lot. It was exactly what I was hoping for. There's the middle underlying mystery that's really intriguing, but also just this really unique and interesting approach to the show and them being this sort of homage to old TV while still being its own thing. Just super cool. I'm so excited to see where it goes.
Yeah. And I almost watched them both episodes again, but I didn't. But I'm sure I will at some point because I really liked it. All right. Well, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Leave us a message. Or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we've got Legion of Superheroes, Sensational Wonder Woman, Batman Catwoman, Rorschach, Future State Catwoman, Future State Immortal Wonder Woman, Future State Nightwing, Future State Shazam, Future State Superman Worlds of War, and Future State The Next Batman. And of course, we've got the season premiere of Batwoman. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Time to go.
You sure this is necessary?
The Guardians of the Universe seem to think so.
How long will you be gone? But we will be back, little brother.
I wish I could go with.
I doubt your mother would approve.
I'll miss you.
Perhaps you could water the plants in my apartment while I am gone.
Be careful, all right?
May the gods be with you all.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.